Welcome to this episode of Shared Soil, a podcast dedicated to creating community, honoring challenges, and encouraging personal and professional growth for all people in agriculture. My name is Kendall Cornelius, and I'm a field specialist for agricultural business management with UNH Cooperative Extension.
And I'm Rebecca Duby, providing communication and technology for the specialists of UNH Extension.
So, Rebecca, we have so much to talk about in today's episode, so I think we should just dive right into it. How does that sound?
We have some great guests today.
We do. We are very lucky to have two guests with us from the UNH Extension Health and Wellbeing team. So to give a little background, though, before we introduce those guests, last winter, Kate Graves and I did a webinar about farming while pregnant, disabled, or chronically ill. And that is basically what gave us the idea for this episode today, because we had about 12 or 13 people on that call, and they asked some incredible questions and shared information about their lives. And Kate shared information about living with chronic illness and pregnancy. And so we thought this is really information that more people need to see and more people need to hear and get exposed to. And I'm very excited about the resources and tools that we're going to talk about in this episode as well, because I think it really gives a lot of actionable items for those people who are stuck inside, maybe for the winter, and then you're planning your garden for the spring. I always get excited about planning my garden, so I'm excited to hear this episode so that I can kind of follow along and start making plans that might help my gardening and backyard livestock adventures a little bit more accessible for the times that I don't feel like I'm really up for things, or I'm kind of struggling through some things. So without further ado, let's get started with introductions.
Sure. Will we start with Kate?
Hello. So my name is Kate Graves. I am a registered dietitian. I'm also licensed in the state of New Hampshire. I am a field specialist with the UNH Extension Health and Wellbeing team, and I specialize in maternal and early childhood health. And I was also diagnosed with relapsing remitting MS back in 2016. So I have a chronic illness.
Thank you, Kate. And how about Amy?
Hi. So I'm Amy Holler. I'm a dietitian like Kate, focused on public health. I've worked with Extension for a number of years in a few different states. I'm from New Hampshire, actually, but worked in the University of Maryland and also Ohio State University in the past. Now I work as a state specialist on our health and well-being team. And our health and well-being team, sort of overall, it takes a whole person approach to health and well-being that emphasizes people's assets and strengths. So something that we can link to in the show notes is our wellness wheel assessment that Michelle Kroll on our team has developed. And it sort of is a way to describe 8 different dimensions of wellness. So in my world, what I focus on tends to be nutrition, physical activity, but there's other dimensions of wellness like emotional wellness, environmental, financial, intellectual, occupational, social, spiritual. So the wellness wheel assessment sort of describes all those different aspects of wellness, and it can help individuals to sort of identify core health values and goals that are important to them, you know, within that spectrum. So I just wanted to mention that as sort of a overall overarching view of our health and well-being programs. My focus, being a dietitian and state specialist, is to lead our programs. There are federal nutrition education programs, FNEP, the Expanded Food and Nutrition Education Program, and then SNAP Ed, which is the education arm of the SNAP program. SNAP is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, formerly known as food stamps. I feel like these are a lot of acronyms. My life sometimes feels like a lot of acronyms. So basically, these programs focus on nutrition and physical activity. And overall, we do, you know, in our FNEP and SNAP Ed work, we do a lot of education. So classes, group classes, kids, adults, older adults, parents. And then we also do social marketing work. And we are doing a lot more these days of trying to work on engaging partners and communities in policies, systems, and environmental changes to promote health and well-being that incorporate education and social marketing. So really sort of like a whole community approach to wellness and health and well-being in that way. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, thank you, Amy. We have 3 big topics we want to talk about today. And those include physical activity, maybe some of its benefits, its challenges, whether there's tools for self-compassion. We're going to talk about growing food as physical and mental medicine, eating for both physical and mental health. And we're also going to talk about nutrition by addition, whether that includes planting a garden or adding small livestock that adds to your nutritional intake, or adapting your garden plan for physical limitations. So why don't we start with the physical activity for all? What do you think about this, Kendall?
That's a great question. So I have to first say that in a former life, before I came to Extension, I was actually a professional athlete. I competed in Steel Timber Sports Series. That's a national series. But I guess you could say the overarching thing is I competed in professional lumberjack sports. So for me, physical activity has been an incredibly important part of my life. And through that, I have had to really learn a lot of injury prevention strategies. And so much came from eating well and keeping fueled and hydrating myself. And in addition to that, I also worked in agricultural retail stores for the first 10 years of my career. So that was a very, very physically demanding job. So a lot of ergonomics, a lot of lifting correctly, and again, protecting my body. So one thing that I always struggled with, and that's what the thing I want to ask Kate the most about, is I was already so tired from competing and working out and coming home from a very physically intense job. And yet I knew there were gaps in my strength and my whole body strength and wellness. And so, Kate, we talked a lot in that webinar about, like, even though you have a very physically demanding job as a farmer or as somebody in agriculture, we know those gaps exist. So I don't know if there's like a specific question there, but I really want to hear you say all about those aspects of physical wellness and physical activity and just kind of give us your approach to that.
Yeah, thank you. So I just want to start off by saying, I feel like when people think of physical activity, they have kind of a mindset of going to the gym. And really, physical activity is including any bodily movement that you're doing. This can include household chores, labor that's being done on the farm, if you're someone in agriculture, activities such as yoga or weightlifting. I mean, it can certainly be going to the gym, but it's really more encompassing than that. There are two types of physical activity. There's aerobic physical activity, which is something that's going to get your heart really racing, breathing harder. I think of it more as like cardio. And then there's anaerobic activity, which is short bursts of intense activity. And that's more of like weightlifting or potentially like sprinting. Rather than the term physical activity, I tend to like to think of joyful movement because I think it breaks us out of that mindset just going to the gym.
I love that.
Yeah,
joyful movement. True.
Because it really is, when you hear physical activity, everybody's thinking like, oh, I have to go to the gym and lift weights, and that's the only way to be healthy. But really, there's so much more than that. Joyful movement is really anything that you do that you enjoy doing. People get really rigid with physical activity, and it's this concept of like, if I'm not running a 5K or doing strength training for a full hour, it doesn't count. But really anything that you're doing where you're moving your body counts towards physical activity and counts towards those physical activity requirements. So I love what you were just saying. And we talked about it at the webinar, but this concept of like, look at what you're doing already and see kind of like, oh, I'm using my arms a lot because I'm doing a lot of gardening and there's a lot of, you know, pulling and weeding and this. And then identifying, okay, where are those gaps? Is it something that I need to be doing more with my legs? Maybe I could go for a walk during the day because the gardening that I'm doing involves a lot of sitting. So really identifying kind of the gaps in those physical activity and aiming for that rather than forcing yourself into this mindset of I need to go to the gym for a full hour.
I want to respond to that really quickly. And I agree. And I think the length of time is the other misnomer. So one of the things I had a hard time overcoming as I was retiring from my professional athlete career was thinking, if I'm going to the gym, I have to go for 2 hours and I have to hit this calorie count. And it took me a long time to heal from that, to say like, if today I'm really only up for a 10-minute walk on the treadmill, then that's the healthier option than me feeling like I have to go grind it out at the gym. So I love your term joyful movement, because I found so much more excitement and joy and feeling good about like giving my body exactly what it needed and then listening to it. And when I was like, okay, I'm comfortable here, I'm done. than just being able to turn off the treadmill and walk away and feel like I've accomplished what I was missing or just wanted to accomplish for that day.
And I think that's where a lot of people get stuck, is it's this concept of I have to do an hour of physical activity. But like you're saying, you could
totally,
do 10 minutes, 5 minutes. What's realistic for you in your day? What are you able to fit in to be able to do, rather than putting yourself in this mindset of I have to do an hour of work at the gym? Because, you know, people have busy schedules. They have a lot going on. If you have a chronic illness, maybe you're not feeling that great. So fitting in what you're able to do is certainly better than. And you're probably going to get more out of it than just trying to do a full hour of activity. If you can do a 10 minute walk, then that's fantastic.
Yeah. And I think I would add to that too, that the research has moved a lot in the field of physical activity over the years. And for a lot of years, we were sort of telling people in our guidelines that it almost didn't count if you didn't do exercise for 30 minutes or more, because the research that we had back then was kind of showing that most of the benefits associated with physical activity tended to be for like 30 minutes or more duration. That has changed a lot. So, you know, in 2018, the new physical activity guidelines came out and they were like, you know, we have research now that shows any movement, you know, like 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there. We still aim for, you know, as a guideline, 30 minutes of aerobic activity 5 days a week, but you don't need to do it all at once. So part of that, if anyone feels like a little gaslit by like, you know, I always felt like, you know, and then blaming themselves, I was the one holding myself accountable for like, you know, I could only have 30 minutes a day. Like there was actually a lot of messaging out there that back then that it might not count if you only did 10 minutes here or there. And luckily we're past that now. And we have research that shows that it does.
Right. And it all comes back to what, as you were saying, Kendall, what you can give, right? What energy or ability you have that day, which can alter quite a bit depending on your circumstance and situation.
I feel like I totally get it. You know, as somebody who has a chronic disease and also somebody who's a mother of a very young child, it can be really discouraging when you're not getting yourself out there and feeling like you're doing, you know, an hour of rigorous activity. But I heard this quote recently that I really love, and it's, if you only have 30% and you give 30%, you're actually giving 100%. And in today's world where we're constantly go, 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 especially if you're pregnant or you have a chronic illness, I think it's really important that we show ourselves a little grace and compassion about these things. Something is usually better than nothing. And we need to get ourselves out of this all or nothing mindset. And you know, especially as women, I think we need to support each other in changing that mindset as well.
Totally. I will say one of my very favorite things that I discovered this summer is going to a state park and going and recreating, like just going for a nice walk. It's so funny because I always thought like, oh, well, hiking means I have to go like hike Mount Washington, or it has to be like really intense or whatever. And one of my favorite tools to help keep my really competitive mind in check is I have my Apple Watch, but like I think a Fitbit or really anything that helps you reflect your heart rate that you're feeling at that moment. If I kind of set that limit for myself, I'm like, okay, 150 beats a minute is where I'd like to keep it. And if I'm really pushing too hard to enjoy my walk, then that means that like that's going to reflect on my Apple Watch, on my heart rate screen. So I've kind of developed a little system where I remind myself, I give myself like a little checkpoint in my mind that says I'm here to enjoy this and I'm not here because I feel like I have to work out hard. Like I need to take my time. And so that's a great little tool or a little tip I would want to share for people to just kind of like get something that will help you recognize like how hard you're pushing, because sometimes you feel it and sometimes you don't. And that's a great thing to work with your doctor on, or someone who is licensed and trained to help you work within your heart rate zones.
If you don't enjoy it, you're less likely to stick with it.
That's the truth.
Oh, true. True. Great. Anything else, Kate, that you want to say here or add in?
I like to point out too that, again, anything that you're doing to move your body is going to count towards those physical activity goals. Farming, you tend to get in a good amount of physical activity each day. So again, incorporating kind of places where you feel like you're lacking. And I just also, there's so many benefits to physical activity and finding joyful movement. It's such a powerful tool for us to be able to improve our health. It's not just a tool for weight management, but it's also reducing disease risk, like heart disease. It can be a tool for improving mental health outcomes, increasing your chances of living longer, which is important to all of us, I think, and then helping to manage chronic disease conditions. So it's really such a great tool for us to use as long as we're finding ways to use it that works for us.
Great.
Yeah. And sorry, I want to add one more thing in here too, because what you said just kind of sparked something in my brain. I think from an ergonomic standpoint, it means much of what we do from like the food and ag team is talk about workflow and ergonomics and whole body health, in the sense that like if you're stretching and you're saying, man, why is my shoulder so stiff today? Like, what was I doing yesterday? So using physical activity as a check and balance system, or as a way to kind of check in with your body. And that's going to give you a lot of information about the activities that you're doing. And maybe you could reassess how you're set up to do them. So the CDC has excellent guidelines about working surfaces, working space. They give you very specific heights, reaching lengths, like 17 and a half inches in front of you. And like in that zone is like the best working zone. So kind of checking in with your body and saying, if my shoulders are sore, I was pruning raspberries yesterday. Maybe there's a better tool out there that I can use that's not going to make me feel this way. Or maybe I should only be doing that for 45 minutes instead of 3.5 hours, and then take a break and then come back to it. So I think physical activity also really reflects on our work practices. And that's not just you. If you have employees, or if you manage people, if you manage a whole farm, it's a great question to ask your employees, like, how are you feeling today? Like, I know you did 2.5 hours of digging potatoes yesterday. Do you think there's a better way we could do that? Or where are you feeling that? Maybe we could look into some better lifting practices or working practices. Yeah, I think to kind of look at this from an agriculture lens, there's a lot of value in doing physical activity that can reflect or help to show you where your work practices could use some reevaluation as well.
I think too, a lot of us, when we get stressed, when we're busy, when we're just, you know, living our normal lives and there's a lot going on, we can lose touch with our bodies a little bit. And, you know, you tend to not realize that. So when you think about physical activity, again, Kate's talked a lot about that it's not just getting in the gym and stuff, but even thinking about stretching, like just stretching. I know so many of us might feel like, okay, if I'm going to do physical activity, then I need to get my heart rate up, or I need to, and there are benefits with getting your heart rate up for sure. But doing mindfulness technique along with stretching, maybe some restorative yoga, slowing down and really trying to stay present, especially if you're stressed, especially if you're busy, especially if you maybe did injure yourself or pulled something at work, that might be a sign that, you know, you're not quite in touch with your body. And, you know, at that time, because your mind is elsewhere and you're kind of not. And so doing some of those, the stretching, the mindfulness, meditation, any of that can also help you get back in touch with your body and sort of pay attention to what needs some attention and what feels good, what doesn't feel good. I guess I'm trying to emphasize that if you're stressed, you're more likely to not be paying attention to those things and injure yourself. It's more important than ever sometimes to slow down and do those things that, you know, some of us in our heads are like, this is a waste of time, right? It is not a waste of time. It's really important. So stretching and the mindfulness practices, you know, coupled with gentle physical activity can be really beneficial for, you know, our mental health and well-being.
Yeah. And I just want to also put in some, and then we'll move on, Rebecca, I promise. I just wanted to put on a little bit of a plug for two sites. So Agribility specializes in helping farmers adapt farming techniques to their disabilities, but they also offer a myriad of resources, videos, and like specific stretches that match with the activity that you're going to do to help warm up your body. So that's an excellent tool. We can put that link in the show notes. And then there's also AgriSafe. AgriSafe is actually a organization that was started by nurses that were seeing a lot of farmers come in with specific injuries, like rolled ankles, like strained shoulders, that kind of stuff. And so they've also developed, they have their own podcast, actually, highly recommended. So go check that out. And we'll put that link in the show notes too. But any sort of resource that you can directly see, if I'm going to do this activity, these are the muscle groups I need to warm up and stretch and I should be paying attention to. So just like you're saying, Amy, bringing mindfulness to what muscle groups you're using and how you're using your body, the knowledge is power, the more you know, right? So I think that would be a great option if you want to start a culture of health and well-being on your farm, bring those stretches and do a group stretch or a group workout that morning just to kind of warm up and pay attention to where you're going to be activating muscle groups in your body.
Yeah, there was like a viral TikTok. I don't know if you guys saw it a while back of, construction workers, like, you know, they get on the job in the morning. My dad has a construction company and they all meet on the job and they're in their like construction vests and they were all like stretching together. And it was just like, if you haven't seen it, you should check it. It was really cute. But it's like a good reminder that you can create this like culture of wellness, like within your organization, whatever your organization is.
Terrific. Well, that plays into our next topic, which is also about taking care of your body and overall wellness and growing food as physical and mental medicine. We know that one way to give 100% is to provide your bodies with the best food that we can. And women in agriculture have the benefit of being at the forefront of food production. So, Amy, what are some opportunities and benefits they have for growing the best food for physical and mental health?
Yeah. So starting with the best food, there's a lot of different ways we can define that. And so when I'm thinking about the best food for physical and mental health, there's a lot of things I would consider. I think from a perspective of supporting overall physical and mental health, you know, there's probably three things I would think about. A lot of us know that eating a lot of highly processed foods can be inflammatory. So inflammation is a big problem, and stress can lead to inflammation and inflammation can lead to stress. And it's sort of this whole nasty process that can happen inside of us. And then, you know, when you have inflammation in the body, it can lead to weight gain and insulin resistance and other things. So thinking about inflammation is something, thinking about, you know, brain health. I know a lot of us think about depression, anxiety, our current mood, you know, supporting our mood even in the moment those are all things we can consider, but also thinking long-term about reducing our risk of Alzheimer's disease, dementia. Those are, you know, big concerns for a lot of us. And there are certain foods that are shown to be associated with a reduced risk of Alzheimer's disease and dementia. So that's another thing I would think about. And then finally, keeping your gut happy. So a lot of us have heard about our microbiome, right? We have a wonderful researcher at UNH, Carlo Dadao, who studies the microbiome and works with my team on lots of different research projects. I don't know if everyone knows this, but I remember the first time I heard it, I was sort of blown away that if you counted every cell on your body, that's part of your body, I don't remember how many that is, but 9 out of 10 of those cells are not human cells. They're microbes. They're a lot of them are living in your gut, or, you know, but they're in your mouth, they're on your skin, they're everywhere. And so you're 1/10 human, maybe. You're a super organism. But you know, that really kind of blew me away. And a lot of them do live in your gut, and they do a lot of really important things in there. There are ways that, you know, when you keep your gut happy, it keeps you happy, I would say. So thinking about inflammation, thinking about long-term brain health, thinking about keeping your gut happy. Based on all of that, I would say that luckily, it sounds like there might be a really complicated answer, but it's not really. There's lots of different complicated studies, but, you know, oh, walnuts do this and kale does that and whatever. But overall, eating lots of plants, which includes beans, that reduces inflammation in your body, that promotes long-term brain health. You know, plants contain fiber. That's a big thing here. And those gut microbes, they eat fiber. They love fiber. And you only find fiber in plant foods. So eating lots of plants is really important. And, you know, I always put in a plug for beans. They get a bad rap and they are so good for you. It's not just the green veggies, even though those are very important. Beans have a special type of starch in them called resistant starch. And your microbes are like in heaven when you eat that. They just love that stuff. So definitely thinking about including beans when you think about eating lots of plants. Thinking about lots of colors, having a lot of variety, a lot of colors, that's important. You know, different colors are associated with different like antioxidants, for example, which are really important for fighting inflammation. And so just, you don't have to memorize which antioxidant, you don't have to know that tomatoes have lycopene or you know, whatever. You don't need to memorize all that, but you can just try to make sure you're having a variety of colors. And color makes me happy. So I like having a pretty colorful plate anyway.
My mother always had that adage growing up that your plate had to be colorful. So I didn't learn it as the specifics, but if your plate was all one color, it was not a good meal. Yeah. You know, it's too bland. So you had to bring in lots of color. So that's great to hear that reinforced as nutritionally.
Absolutely. And that includes green. If your whole plate's green, you are not like, you might be a time to check in with yourself and be like, okay, am I getting a little overzealous with my pursuit of health? You know, that sort of perfectionist mindset that we'll talk about. You need all the colors and you need protein and complex carbohydrates and, you know, all of that. And then the other thing I would say is overall healthy fats, focusing on fats. That's another thing that has changed over the years. And there's been a lot of media attention on this, but also like a lot of misinformation. And really, it's important not to shy away from eating fat in your diet for most of us. You know, if you have a gallbladder condition or something, you know, it might look different. But overall, don't shy away from fats. Research has shown that like, it's really not the amount of fat you're eating, it's the quality. You don't need to worry about limiting fat for most of us. It's more making sure you're getting healthy sources of fats. And, you know, the fat sources that we would recommend as being really healthy are going to be fatty fish, any fish, fatty fish, like salmon is obviously king, but there's so many benefits to lots of different type of fish and having nuts and seeds as well, you know, whichever ones you like, but nuts and seeds, man, like they are powerhouses of nutrition. So those would be some recommendations I would, and you know, olive oil and those sorts of things.
There is so much misinformation out there right now about like the seed oils, for example, and those being like inflammatory, but there's no research to back that up. It really is. It's a healthy fat. It contains some of the omega-3s, omega-6s, depending on the seed oil that you're doing. So yeah, I'm in total agreement with that, Amy, with the healthy fats. It helps you absorb some of the nutrients. And you know, I think of salad, like for a long time, people were like, don't put dressing on your salad because it's fat, but it's actually going to help you absorb a lot of the nutrients in your salad by having dressing on it. So actually, and it tastes better when it has dressing on it. So it's like, actually go ahead and have the dressing on your salad, because that's actually the healthy choice.
Absolutely. And I know Kate is like a superstar at nuts and seeds. She's always putting chia seeds and hemp seeds on things and eating all sorts of different nuts. So, you know, you're a good example of that. You remind me when I have my mac and cheese or my salad, I can sprinkle some nuts or seeds on top. I actually think about you. and I agree. Canola oil is not going to kill you. You know, canola oil, especially, everyone's freaking out about it. And it's just...
The other thing that you made me think of, Amy, is you mentioned that highly processed foods can be inflammatory, which they totally can. But there's a lot of information or misinformation out there about the difference between processed foods and highly processed foods. I mean, if you buy vegetables at the store that are pre-cut, that's considered a processed food. I mean, in my mind, it's a vegetable. It's healthy. It's still something you want to be consuming. But highly processed foods are really going to be more of those that are really high in salt and fat and have really in sugar and have really been processed. They usually come in like a shiny package. Certainly, it's not, you can't eat those ever, but just kind of watching what you're doing with those, I think, more than anything else.
So I have a question. We've mentioned this term inflammatory several times now. What do we mean when we talk about, like, I think rheumatology, I think about like, you know, joints and that kind of stuff when I hear inflammation, but how would you define as a symptom of like inflammation that someone might say like, oh, maybe that is kind of like what I'm dealing with here and here's a better way to eat to solve that?
Yeah. So when I'm talking about foods that might be inflammatory, it's not always something you're necessarily going to notice as like a symptom. There's a lot of inflammatory processes that might be happening in your body, and they can manifest in different ways that you may or may not be in touch with or notice. But really, it's this inflammatory cascade of this release of, you know, chemicals within your body that then cause different inflammatory processes to occur. So it's not something that I would necessarily say you might notice, but it's just something to sort of keep in mind when you're thinking about overall healthy foods, which ones promote inflammation and which ones fight inflammation. Foods that fight inflammation might be foods that have like, you know, healthy fats, antioxidants, fiber, those sorts of things. Hey, I don't know if you'd add anything.
No, I totally agree. And I think a lot of it too, because all of us are individuals and everything's so individualized. In my mind, a lot of it comes back to like, how do I feel after eating this? You know, sometimes you eat a meal and you're like, wow, that did not make me feel very good. It tasted good, but it did not make me feel very good. So I think a lot of it is coming back to self-checking, taking mindful minutes when we can. Again, we're in a very go, go, go kind of world. So some of us just like eat on the go and then are done. But if we can take an extra minute to just check in with ourselves and how we're feeling when we're eating, I think that's a huge piece of it as well. I mean, if something doesn't make you feel great, maybe next time you don't eat that, or you have a smaller serving of it and pair it with something else that does make you feel a little bit better. Again, it's not this all or nothing mindset, I think is what a lot of people think of.
Well, I think that really plays into our third topic, which is nutrition by addition, and that idea of making nutrition an enjoyable activity, enjoyable part of your life. So Kate and Amy, can you speak a little bit more to what that means?
This is my favorite topic to talk about. It really is. Nutrition by addition, you know, the word nutrition, it's similar to physical activity. When somebody hears the word nutrition, they immediately start thinking of all the things they shouldn't be doing. I shouldn't eat too much fat. I shouldn't eat too much sugar. I shouldn't eat too much salt. I should not drink soda. You know, whatever it is, it's all these shouldn'ts in your mind. But I think to make nutrition more manageable and a little easier for all of us, start thinking about shoulds. Okay, I'm eating this meal. What can I add to it to make it a little bit more nutritious? What can I do to add a little bit of fiber, to add a little bit more color? You know, this is a meal that I really enjoy, that I know my family can eat, that I can make on a time crunch, that's manageable for me and my family. But looking at it and saying, what can I add to this meal to make it a little bit more nutritious, to add a little bit more, again, fruits, vegetables, fiber, beans, as Amy was saying, nuts, seeds. What can I do to add to this meal so that it's a little bit more nutritious, rather than sitting and telling ourselves, I shouldn't do this, I shouldn't do this, I shouldn't do this, because that's what makes it not fun. And that's, I think, when people think of nutrition, it's this like negative connotation in their mind of, oh, I'm only supposed to eat a salad every single day. And it's like, well, it doesn't necessarily have to be that, you know. I think of, again, I have a toddler at home. He loves mac and cheese. And on a night where I don't have a lot of time, we do the box mac and cheese. But I'm like, okay, what am I missing from this meal that I can add? Okay, I need a little bit of protein, so maybe I can add some beans or some nuts in here. You know, or maybe I'll make it with some Greek yogurt so it has a little bit more into it.
You need color.
Yeah, I was going to say, I need some color into it, so it doesn't have enough color. So let's do some kind of mixed vegetables in here so we can add to it. So my son has never had like a plain mac and cheese. We always have one that is very colorful and has a ton of stuff in it, because it really is this concept of addition. What can I add to make this a little bit more nutritious, to make it a little bit more filling, so that it's manageable for me and tastes good.
So I have to say, I'm over here giggling because I've had several instances where I'm like, oh, I really want a little bit more protein today, or like, I just want like something extra. And I'm like, oh, I have chickens. Man, I should just go squeeze the chicken a little harder, see if I can get an egg. Don't ever squeeze your chickens. I'm just like being facetious, but I just giggle because I always think like, yeah, what could I add to this? Oh, I could go get an egg. So to put like an ag lens into this, thinking about like, if you're really somebody who wants to be at practice, doing this practice, adding in, and you want to grow your own food, like chickens are a great way to do that, because not only do they give you obviously the egg benefits, it's the physical activity benefit. I really find so much joy in going out and just spending 10 minutes watching my chickens or petting them or picking them up or interacting with them before, of course, I squeeze them to get the eggs for my lunch. But... But I guess my point here is that like, I am so in agreement with your nutrition by addition concept, Kate, but I think it's also like you're giving yourself those opportunities to add things into your life. You're kind of like, it's nutrition for your soul, right? Like you're adding things in that give you that physical, joyful movement approach. And then also like growing your food is great. And putting your hands in soil, even if it's just a little container garden you have for herbs that make your spaghetti sauce taste that much better. It's all very meaningful and fulfilling. And if you're not somebody who's like into plants, like I love gardening, but I don't love vegetable gardening. I love perennial gardening, like flowers and stuff. That's cool too. Like having a beautiful bouquet on your table as you enjoy your meal and as you enjoy dinner, I think is just as beneficial. And then also the chickens. There's so many great backyard animals that if you don't want to go, I'm going to use the term whole hog. If you don't want to go whole hog and get a pig and raise your own meat that way, chickens are a really easy animal to get into. Like a small coop houses 6 hens very easily, and 10 laying hens of like a good laying breed should give you enough eggs to feed a family of 4 for a year. So that is kind of like a great standard to say, like, depending on how many eggs you want to be adding into your diet, you can get the right amount of chickens to match that. So like from an ag lens, from a health and wellness perspective, I love this concept of nutrition by addition.
Yeah, I love that you brought up that having chickens brings you joy, like spending time with them, petting them. There are so many mental health benefits associated with connecting with animals, and those include chickens. And you touched on, you know, the joy that gardening can bring us as well. And I think, you know, nutrition by addition, that concept, just like gardening, it can be an opportunity to really show yourself that you care about yourself. I think when we think about diets are often, they're more about everything you're denying yourself a lot of times. I mean, I think anyone that's been on a strict diet, which most women honestly have by 8th grade or lower.
Most women start a diet by age 6.
Wow.
That's crushing.
Right.
I believe it, but that's a crushing statistic to hear.
I think that we all have experienced how punishing, you know, a diet can feel, even though you're pursuing something that you think is good and probably, you know, you're trying to be, you know, the best, healthiest version of yourself that you can be. I mean, die is literally in the name. And then another thing about diets is that they can be really isolating, and we cannot underestimate the value of social connection and the impact that loneliness really has on our health. We know a lot about that. And then I think we just came out of a pandemic. We all, I think, are experiencing this more than ever these days. And really, it's at the forefront of our minds. And, you know, there's research that shows that loneliness, when it comes to like cardiovascular disease, like having a heart attack, for example, like loneliness is a bigger risk factor for having a heart attack than smoking. Okay. And I don't know that people know that it has a huge impact. So, and again, not everyone on a diet is lonely and isolated, but some people, when they're on restrictive diets, feel like they can't go to social things because they don't want to eat what's there. They don't want to be tempted, or they're like trying to be really good, quote unquote. And so
it becomes like a self-punishment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm not saying this for everyone, but it's just, I think there's elements of this that we've all experienced. And what I like about nutrition by addition is that it sort of flips that on its head and encourages people to practice self-compassion and a positive mindset, which is incredibly important for our overall health and well-being. So when I think about nutrition by addition, you know, for myself, I like to ask myself, what can I add to my plate to take care of future me, right? Like thinking about future me, because identifying that it is important, and it's important for our self-worth and our sense of self and our, like, you know, sort of self-compassion, that we do acknowledge that we do care about our long-term health, and we do want to make it a priority, just not an obsession. It's very positive to be working towards a long-term goal of maintaining a healthy weight and being physically active and being, you know, healthy and happy in our bodies for like as long as we can. But it's when we flip over that edge of now we're obsessed and now we're not going to things and now we're only eating green, and, you know, that it becomes maybe more detrimental. And so, yeah, I think about what can I add? I think about it in a very loving way. How can I take care of future me today? And not every day is like that. Sometimes taking care of me right now is more important depending on how I'm feeling. And I might eat ice cream for dinner and enjoy it and move on. But most days, you know, I think about future me. And I also think you can think to yourself, would adding more color to my plate make this meal a more enjoyable experience? I think when we think about nutrition by addition, we're often thinking about adding fruits and vegetables, where you find a lot of nutrition, and they're colorful, right? And so I get a lot of joy out of having a colorful plate, like I said, and I think fruits and veggies add color, they add crunch, they add freshness. I think about what they're adding to my plate and what that means to me, all those positives. And I think really overall, it's about steering away from that restrictive black and white thinking and overall health and well-being that comes up over and over again, that the more restrictive and black and white you get, it's harder to feel compassionate for yourself. And it's harder to sort of like celebrate this life and how you're feeling. So I think choosing to focus on how we add to our plates and choosing to focus on how that can bring us joy and support ourselves is a really powerful and compassionate way to practice eating and being well.
I think a lot of it too is changing the language that we're using too. Exactly what you're saying, Amy, like of self-compassion. Actually, I misquoted. It's most girls experience body dissatisfaction by age 6 and most girls have gone on a diet by age 8. But understanding too that the language that we're saying for ourselves is also impacting future generations. How you talk about yourself, how you talk about other people and their bodies is also impacting, you know, the people who are listening. So I think it is that self-compassion lens of, I guess, less of this, I need to go on a diet, and more of, I want to treat myself with kindness. And so I want to add more nutrition into my life for future me.
You know what? If there's one thing that just rustles my jimmies like nothing else, it's when I go to grocery shop and I see packaging that says guilt-free. Oh, by principle, I will not purchase the item. Don't care if it's healthy. Don't care if it's not. The fact of the matter is that no one should ever feel guilty about eating a food, because like everything in moderation, right? I think it's horrible how the companies that produce these foods, but also that package them, are able to play into this mindset of like, you don't have to feel guilty if you eat our food. It's terrible. I feel better knowing that when I purchase locally grown foods, I feel like I vote with my dollars very, very intentionally, and I support local agriculture. And that's me personally, but it is something I would really recommend folks to look into if it's accessible to you. And we're really lucky here in New Hampshire that local food is very easily accessible to most of us who live in rural communities. It would be great if we could find more ways to get those foods into the places that people don't have transportation access or can't access those kinds of services. But it's certainly something that folks should look into, because it's a lot of fun. It's a great family adventure to go out and just drive around for a couple hours and find all these little farm stands and, you know, pick a treat, pick like a fresh grown piece of fruit or vegetable is delicious when it's like right out of the farm stand and you know it got put in there that morning. Also, we in New Hampshire have access to raw milk ice cream. So depending on how you feel about that, there's a lot of little creameries and micro dairies popping up. So it's not just like highly processed ice cream. So there's some fun options that you will want to research and look into before you start eating those kinds of things. But if you're comfortable with that, it is accessible. So whether it's a vegetable or it's an ice cream treat, I think it's great for us to enjoy the sourcing of it, where it came from. And it, like, I'm kind of flipping this idea of you shouldn't be eating something, like, you should feel great about what you do eat because of where it's sourced. You can like, you can meet the cow or meet the chicken that the product came from, or meet the farmer that grew your food. And that's a really interesting way to help yourself kind of transition from feeling like those shouldn'ts to being really excited about the things that you should. Yeah.
Which brings us back to our farmers again. Amy, I'll give you a chance to talk as we're going to work to wrap up the episode now. So much good information. But is there anything else anybody would like to add, or anything we want to make sure is listed in our notes, any resources before we go?
So I was just going to say that, Kendall, I think that I'm glad that you brought up finding food, finding local food in New Hampshire. And our team does have a food access map that we can link to in the show notes that contains lots of different places where people can access foods, including some of those local farm stands and whatnot. It also contains places where people can redeem SNAP benefits, apply for WIC. So bringing up that concept of food assistance, I think, is important. Kendall, you brought up the guilt packaging, the guilt, you know, and that you don't like feeling guilted by your food. And that's really important. And when we feel guilt, it leads to another feeling inside of us that we don't talk about a lot, which is shame. And that's shame is very detrimental to our well-being. And shame is something that can prevent us from asking for help. And it's important to remember that shame it really is toxic to our well-being. So some people may be familiar with Brené Brown. She's a very famous author and has a podcast and whatnot. And she says that shame cannot survive being spoken, and that the opposite of shame is experiencing empathy. And it is very important. And many of us think about empathy in the context of, you know, with other people, feeling empathy and practicing empathy with each other. But we can also show ourselves empathy. And it's incredibly important for us to show ourselves empathy so that we can, you know, to support our overall well-being. And a really powerful act of showing yourself empathy is that if you do need help, if you could use assistance, reaching out for that assistance when you need it, including food assistance, is a powerful, powerful way to fight against shame and to show yourself that you do care about yourself and that you are worth getting the resources that you need. And in New Hampshire, more people than ever now actually qualify for the SNAP program, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. New Hampshire put changes in place that increased the amount of income you can make to qualify for SNAP benefits. That happened in January. So now it's 200% of the federal poverty line. And so even if you haven't qualified in the past, you may qualify now. And we know a lot of people, especially with the rising costs of housing and inflation, they may be in a place where they can't afford food, even if they're making, even if they're making more money in the past. So thinking about applying for SNAP, we'll link in the show notes to New Hampshire Food Bank has an outreach program that helps people apply for SNAP. And we'll link to that. And if you do get SNAP benefits, you can actually double your SNAP dollars for fruits and vegetables at local farmers markets and independently owned grocery stores through a program called Granite State Market Match and Double Up Food Bets, which is also through the New Hampshire Food Bank. So we'll link to that in the show notes as well. And finally, I wanted to mention that, you know, in terms of gardening, one of the things that most people don't know about the SNAP program is that if you receive SNAP dollars, you can use those for edible seedlings, edible seeds to grow your own food. And you can use your SNAP dollars for that. And so there's some caveats to that. The place that you purchase the seeds or the seedlings have to accept SNAP benefits to be able to do that. And, you know, some garden stores may not. But a lot of us, we can get seeds and sometimes seedlings even at like our local grocery stores nowadays, and they do accept SNAP often, if not always. So I just wanted to mention all of that, that, you know, taking care of yourself includes getting the help that you need when you need it and getting assistance.
Amy, I just want to add to that too, because we live in the live free or die state. And I think a lot of people have this mindset of, I don't want to take advantage of these programs because I don't want to take from someone else who might be in greater need than me. And I just like to point out that that's not how these programs work. They need people to utilize the programs to show that there's a need for them, so that if there is someone potentially in a greater need than you, that they're also able to utilize the program. That's that they want people to come in. They want them to use it to show that there's a need to continue these programs. So again, we have this mindset of, I don't want to use it because I don't want to take from someone else, but I just like to point out that that's not how these work. So if you do qualify, if there is a need, please use it, because it's not only going to benefit you, but it could also benefit other families as well. And just kind of break the stigma with using these, because everybody needs help once in a while, and we're living in a crazy economy right now.
SNAP is it's what's called an entitlement program, which means that everyone who qualifies gets it. There's no cap. It's not like a set amount of money where when it's gone, it's gone. If you qualify, you get it. You're not taking anything from anyone else.
Actually, I would argue that you're giving things. Farmers, you know, if they're at a farmer's market, the more people at that market, the better. And so it's good for the farmer. It's good for the people. Everyone's benefiting. So I am so glad we had this conversation, because I think it's really an important thing to approach from everyone's perspective of, let's stand up for the people who need it and could utilize it, but also the people who are going to benefit from it on the other end as well.
Yeah.
Awesome. Rebecca, do you want to wrap us up? Because we're just going to keep going like forever.
Well, I wish we could, but thank you so much, Kate and Amy, for all of your information and wonderful insights into these topics. So we thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you soon on our next episode of Shared Soil.
Shared Soil is a production of University of New Hampshire Cooperative Extension, an equal opportunity educator and employer. Views expressed on this podcast are not necessarily those of the university, its trustees, or its volunteers. Inclusion or exclusion of commercial products in this podcast does not imply endorsement. The University of New Hampshire, U.S. Department of Agriculture, and New Hampshire counties cooperate to provide extension programming in the Granite State. Learn more at extension.unh.edu.